Welcome to Comic Culture here on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio. Now also podcast on at comicbookdaily.com. I'm your host this evening, Walter Duralia, and joined today by a very special guest, Vince Marchesano. Hello, Vince.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm just fine.
Excellent. Very honored to have you here, Vince. We'll go over your credentials later in the show. It's enough for the audience to know right now that you're a veteran of the industry, and you've done a lot of work in the comic industry, and we'll touch on some of those things later in the show.
Right? Okay.
For now, though, Vince, I need your help. I need you to do some color commentary as I go over some books that are being released today. Today being Wednesday, Vince, all the books come into all the comic shops across North America.
Yeah, I know. You get my money, don't you?
Yes, I do. That's why you're on the show.
Every Wednesday.
That's why you're on the show. And today is no exception. And I just want your comments on it. Incredible Hercules number 141 hits the stands today. Now, if you remember, 20 issues or so ago, it was the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, yeah, that I remember.
And then they switched over to Hercules because they gave Hulk, like, a new from one up. And then nobody gave Hercules a chance to, last more than five issues. But lo and behold, 20, 30 issues later, the Incredible Hercules is still going on. Now, I'm taken by your facial
really?
Expressions.
It's still going on?
Yes, that you do not read Incredible Hercules.
No, not that one.
No?
I used to read the old Charlton Gladsman one.
Right,
Remember Hercules. Yeah. Hercules has been done so many times right. that I don't know.
Good thing about Hercules, like public domain, right? He's just like an old Greek god.
Yeah,
anybody can
them.
Use him. You can make a comic of Hercules, probably.
I don't know. I may have.
You may have already. All right. Anyways, that's coming out from Marvel today. And from DC, I wanted to highlight a landmark issue. Supergirl number 50 hits the stands today. You read Supergirl?
Yep.
You do?
Yep.
Yeah, you enjoy it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
For a while. It fits in nicely with the this whole world of Krypton thing that's going on right now.
Yeah.
I'm actually reading them. You know, I wait in little arcs and read them.
All together?
Yeah, I read them all in order.
All right. There are things called graphic novels that help you with those things.
Yeah, well, we're thinking about that.
All right. The switch is coming. Now, do you remember that 70s DC did a Supergirl title, like mid-70s, and it only lasted like seven or eight issues? You don't remember that?
Oh, there was an early one. I think it was drawn by Mike Sikowski.
Yes.
That was
great
after.
Covers. Those were great covers, but people obviously weren't ready for it. But for some reason now, Supergirl's doing very well.
Well, Supergirl was always an on and off character. It was a secondary character. It fit nicely into Action Comics, fit into the Superman mythology, but not so much on her own.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. All right. So Supergirl 50 hits the stands today. Incredible Hercules 141 as well. And as always, those are just two of the plethora of stuff coming out today. So everybody, head into your local comic shop, support your local comic shop, and check out the new This Week releases. Vince, what goes on next in the show is a thing called Industry News. Whereas I tell you some news, and you tell me what you think.
Okay.
He's got that look on his face that worries me.
I've got this puzzled look. Yeah.
Puzzled look on his face. All right.
I don't know. People want to listen to you on doing the news here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is their favorite part of the show, Vince.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I'll trust you.
Ultimate Spider-Man, the movie. Basically, have you heard that Spider-Man 4 was canceled?
Yes.
Gone is what's the kid's name that played Spider-Man?
Tobey Maguire.
Sam Raimi's gone. So they're rebooting everything.
Yeah, back to high school days.
Right.
To our old guys' days. You know.
That's right.
Back the way we old guys used to like it.
But it's based on basically the Ultimate Spider-Man story arc that Bendis did, Brian Michael Bendis, in the Ultimate Spider-Man comic, which kind of rebooted everything. Had Spidey back in high school.
Yeah. I'm not an Ultimate fan.
No?
Nope,
no.
Don't read any of the Ultimates.
But you are a Ditko Spidey in high school
fan.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Now, the news, I guess, is that they're going to make it a 3D movie.
They're going to try and make everything into a 3D movie.
What do you think? It's like Avatar influence or what here?
No, this is something before Avatar came out.
You really think so?
Yeah, the industry had already warned all the studios. Being involved in the movie part of it, the movie industry,
right?
I got a lot of this. And a lot of this stuff has been going on now that DreamWorks is going to release all their productions in 3D. Paramount, Fox now, obviously, after Avatar, wants to release it. The only problem is, outside of Avatar, I've still treated it like a gimmick.
Right.
So is Roger Ebert. He agrees with me.
Oh, okay.
Great minds think alike.
But hold on. Do you think what made Avatar work is that they didn't use the 3D part to have, like, you know, mice running at you or balls coming at your face?
The ping pong ball doesn't shoot out in your face.
Like, they actually just kind of made it in an aesthetic part of the movie that you notice, but it doesn't overwhelm you.
Yeah.
And you think, I hope, as I'm saying, I don't want, like, Spidey's web coming at me and I have to duck and all that stuff.
They'll probably do that with Spider-Man.
But if they do it a la Avatar, and subtly and visually, I think, you know, Avatar hit on something that I hope people realize, that they don't have to over-sensationalize
3D. I think most people didn't even realize in Avatar, in some cases, there was even 3D, because once you really start to get into the story and you start to see the movements of all the characters, you forget it's 3D. And it just seems natural. That's why
I think that's the trick.
I don't usually promote 3D material, but 3D movies, but this one I do.
Excellent.
And I got to tell you right off, I'm not a big fan of overall 3D. I think that it's not going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a big mistake to go with 3D televisions too.
Well, listen, I think if it's going to sell,
but
new
then
if it's going to sell new sets, I think that's what.
But then again, when Titanic came out,
I went
to Paramount Pictures and they wanted me to play it, and I said, "Listen, the only way that picture is ever going to make any money is if at the end when the Titanic gets hit by the iceberg, a big spaceship comes out of the hall." And I had to apologize for that one.
Boy, were you wrong, huh?
Oh, was I wrong.
All right. Hey, listen, you touched on it earlier. More industry news here. War of Superman. DC is releasing the War of Superman, which is some sort of big event in the spring it's basically the new Krypton versus Earth.
Yeah.
It's a big battle, and it's only 4 issues, and I don't know if they're going with, like, 24, you know, the TV show 24, where it's real time, but they're saying that the war is 100 minutes long, and each issue will encompass 25 minutes of time. So, is this going to work? I mean, you read, like, the DC, you read the Superman.
Yeah, well, I've been reading this one, and I'm, being the old-style Superman fan, I wish they hadn't done this, but writing-wise and story idea-wise, it fits today. And I think that idea of 25 minutes might be pretty good. After all, how long would a battle last if you had a whole world of Superman come down on Earth? You think it's going to last very long?
Well, yeah, but you know, the Earthlings,
I think we're in deep
we're
trouble.
We're wily, though. We always have some sort of, you know.
We can run and hide?
I don't know. Will Smith will figure something out, you know.
They better hope that they don't all learn how to use heat vision, or we're all in deep
trouble. Or something like that. You see, the heat vision, we'll come up with these, you know, your wife's mirror, right? You know, the makeup mirror. And we'll get it out of our pocket and we'll reflect the heat vision back at
them. But then they'll use the super breath at you. What are you going to do then?
I don't know, Vince. I'm running out of ideas. Okay, but on the spot, I'm sure I can figure something out. Okay, so a lot of Superman fans are looking forward to this. And surprisingly enough, it's not even tied into the Blackest Night.
Yeah, that's the thing that's interesting is how the
Brightest Day, or is it the new one?
Brightest Day will be the new one. Yeah, I'm surprised that they haven't tied in. I mean, Superman and none of the Superman characters, I think, are involved outside of Power. Yeah. The Power Girl, I think, is from GSA, but that's about it. So it's kind of nice that it's separate. And the story has been going pretty good.
Yeah.
Have you read the thing?
I have not read it. You know what? I'm a bad DC reader. Like, you're a bad Marvel reader.
Oh, yeah.
I'll read some Batman-related stuff, but I'm not good at DCU proper, when you're talking Flash and Lantern and Superman and stuff.
Well, I guess of late we've had to make a choice of which way you're going to go.
Well, there's 70 flipping titles going, you know. Yeah. If you're going to read The Siege, which I'm reading, you know, it's taken you I don't know. You got to go through 20 at least. So Blackest Night and Siege, but you know, I'd just be reading.
Well,
so.
that's the trouble nowadays is that artists or the writers don't know how to write short stories.
Yes.
So
yes.
They have to write these huge stories.
Thank you, Mr. Bendis.
Yes.
Okay. Last topic that we're going to touch on, because Vince, you know what? I'm in such a hurry to get to you, and I say that in a professional way, that I even forgot to introduce myself today's show. Walter Duralia, your host.
You already did that at the beginning.
No, I forgot to mention my name. Sorry. I'm only going to do one more news item so we can devote the rest of the show to you. And I wanted to go over some comic sales numbers and show you where comics are placing on the top 25 list and stuff like that. Okay, so in January, The Blackest Night didn't come out. And that's the highest selling monthly right now. But Siege 1 came out, and that was number 1. Green Lantern 50 came out, and that was number 2, but that's Blackest Night related. I'll quickly go over this. Batman and Robin number 7 was 3rd. Captain America Reborn 4th. New Avengers 61 was 5th, which was a Siege tie-in. So you have a good mix in the top 10.
Where did the Archie wedding thing came
from? No, that was earlier. But what I like is you have a good mix in the top 10 of Marvel and DC. I mean, last year or so, it was like Marvel had like 9 of the top 10. And I think a two-company industry is better than a one-company industry. I don't like to see Marvel totally dominate the sales charts.
It should
charts.
Be more than two-company industry.
You're right. You're right. But it's not. Right,
yeah.
And so we have two. So it's important for me. I don't know like, what your opinion. It's important for me that DC is a healthy company, because if DC is turning out good stories, that puts pressure on Marvel to turn out good stories.
Well, the only reason Marvel's been ahead is because they've dominated the films.
Yeah,
I mean, you've had X-Men, you've had Iron Man. Everybody's waiting for Iron Man 2. Saw the previews the other day with Dynamo.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same Dynamo we used to know.
Right,
but I think. More than likely, that's why you had larger sales on Marvel last year.
Yeah.
Was because of that.
And maybe the year before, too.
Maybe right. When Green Lantern comes out, the movie, maybe that'll start to change. DC is getting off its butt, but...
Yeah, but they're so far behind Marvel on the movie projects.
Yeah.
Like, their Superman was a dud, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
And Batman was okay. Obviously, Batman was big.
But by the way, for people who want to see... Brandon Roth, who played Superman. Did you know he's one of the main characters this season in Chuck?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he plays Shaw. I just noticed that the other day.
Oh, look at that.
I thought, boy, why does he look familiar? He goes, hey, that's Superman.
Hey, that's the guy that didn't do a good job in Superman, now working on TV.
And they're rebooting Superman, too, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I read something about that, which is good, too. Right? I mean...
As long as they don't use Luther again.
I know, eh?
Oh.
And I don't know... I think the reason why the first Superman worked is I think Superman, you got to... And the reason why Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman worked, and the reason why the first Christopher Reeves Superman worked, is Superman is so godlike that both of those things, they treated it with a certain level of innocence, you know what I mean? And they captured it really well. And it really worked. The public loved it. I think because it's hard to do Superman because he's so heavy, right? It's so... What do you do with him? You know what I mean? Like, nothing can hurt him except emotion. And these guys played on the emotion, basically the love to Lois Lane. Both of those things worked because Superman...
Well, part of the problem is that too often with Superman and a lot of these movies, they go for the violent aspect of it. Rather
right.
than the storytelling, romantic angle. The first one had everything. It had the action, had the nasty villain who, you know, he didn't take seriously. And you had Lois Lane. And Margot Kidder did a really good job on
great
her.
Job. Yeah.
But the thing back then, though, was the fact that we were going to see Superman fly.
Yeah, the blue screen and all that
yeah,
stuff.
And
yeah,
and it looked so good, you know. I mean, by today's standard... Who knows? They could. I don't even think they did anything much better in the last movie than they did in the
first
ones.
Yeah. Right. All right. All right, Vince. I am going to stop industry news right there. We're exactly halfway through the show. It's just the way I planned it, by the way, just so you know that I'm planning well, okay, that we're pacing well. And I want to basically introduce you to our audience. Now, you're a veteran of the comic book industry in, you're an artist, primarily.
Yes, I've been referred to as the old, the old man of the Canadian comic industry.
Right. Now your work goes back, obviously.
Am I that old?
No, you're young at heart. Your work goes back into the, obviously, 70s.
The 60s.
But I'm just going to go over a few of the things that people should watch for that you've done. You did Charlton Spotlight number 8, which was back in the 70s. Now, you created the character.
No, actually, Jim Whaley did.
Jim Whaley created the character.
Yeah, Blood the Barbarian.
Right. Yeah. But you drew the book.
I did one of the, I did the cover and one of the larger chapters.
Right.
I think Gene Haw and Gene Day. It might have been Gene Day.
Okay.
Did some of it too.
Now, Atlas, you did work on Planet of the Vampires.
Right.
Which issue? Now, Neil Adams did some work on Planet of the Vampires. Did you work with him? Or?
No. Mine was all with Rich Buckler.
Okay, Rich Buckler.
Yeah, he was doing it. I think Adams may have done a cover, but I don't remember who inked them.
Right. Yeah. Now, speaking of Buckler, Your two prominent Batman and Fantastic Four, the proper titles for Marvel and DC, back in the 70s, you ghosted a couple issues for Buckler for each of those titles, right?
A lot of artists came about from ghosting with Rich.
Now, explain to me back then what ghosting was. Like, how did you know this guy? Like, how does this go about? Does he go, hey, Vince, help?
Actually, Stacy Keach introduced me. You know Stacy Keach?
Yeah, okay. The Hammer, Mike Hammer.
Yeah, he introduced me, but we were at Sheridan College at the time.
Yes.
And Stacy had heard, talked to Rich before, and he said, you know, if he'd like to come down and bring some others who might be interested in working with him. And we went down. And it was funny because we started, you know, he let us draw things.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, he didn't like Stacy.
No, wait a minute. Stacy, is this the actor?
No.
No, okay, Stacy. I got the wrong guy. I'm sorry.
He's the artist.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, wrong Stacy.
Yeah, his stuff was very stylized. Yep. And he's done a few books, and he's still an artist. He's out in Vancouver, I think.
Right.
And he's done quite a bit. But he was very stylized, and he just couldn't change.
Right.
I'm lucky. I'm more of a mimic. Mm-hmm. So he asked me if I would do it. I was in good company with George Perez, because George Perez started with him. George Perez ghosted for Buckler before he went on his own.
Right.
Mike Vosburgh, Arvell Jones, there were a few others.
Right.
They would do the same thing, I guess, that I did. I came home from our first meeting, and he gave me some ideas, and he gave me one of the scripts, and he said, break it down. So I went home, I started looking at all his pages and started drawing hands like him and faces like him and positions, and he would help me out. So that basically I went back with the script. I would make little breakdowns of the panel layouts and roughly what the characters would look like inside the on the pages. These were just like little 8.5 by 11 folded like over.
Regular paper.
And then I would bring him back in the next week. I'd go every week. I'd go every Friday and stay there till Sunday or Monday.
Where's this?
He was in Detroit.
Okay.
And I would bring these back. He'd look at them. He'd make some changes if need be. And then if he was happy with it, sometimes I would start transferring them to the pages, to the regular pages. Or he'd say, take it home, bring it back next week. And in the meantime, let's work on this thing. So the next 1 minute, I'm working on Fantastic Four. Next minute, we're designing Deathlok.
Mm-hmm.
There was some others for Charlton's Dragon Master or something.
Right.
I can't remember all of the titles now.
Mm-hmm. Dull blur.
Yeah, there was just so many. But I did remember that in one of those comics, it was either Deathlok or that Demon Master, one of them. At the time, we did, I think, 25 panels on one page.
Whoa.
Yeah, 25 panels. I sat there and I said, you know, we can do this with a bunch of little panels. He goes, yeah. So we started sketching them out. And I think that was the all-time until George Perez beat us a little while back. I can't remember which
on comic. Purpose, probably.
Oh, well, did you? What did he have? Almost 35 or 40?
Right.
Little panels. It was the Legion of Superheroes from right. the Last Crisis thing.
Okay.
And, yeah, so basically that was my job. I'd go home. I would lay them all out. I would start, if he liked everything, then I would start tightening the pencils.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I brought it back, he would take his pencil on it, and he'd just add a few squiggles, because he had this sort of way.
Style, just to make it look like he did it.
Yeah, so right, it looked right, like right. his. But it
that is cool.
Yeah, but most people knew it was me. For
right.
one thing, I would put my name in the
I
background.
Noticed that. I remember, I think it's... people out there in the audience, it's Batman 266, I think. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And there's a panel at the end where the character's in front of a delicatessen or something.
Yeah,
and
it's Vince's.
Vince's or yeah. something. And there's another one where we had Marchesano written.
Yeah,
something
we put
as well.
Him in. Yeah. And this is
you
this,
have to, right? You're not getting any glory. This
right.
is your only way.
This
right?
is the same way a lot of the guys did it for Bob Kane when they did Batman. Because
mm-hmm.
for years and years and years... no one could say they drew Batman except Kane.
Kane,
while
right.
he was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
So I just finished reading an article on Alter Ego, one of the artists. That's how he did it. He says, yeah, I got even. I used to put my name on everything in the background.
That's excellent.
That's how most ghosts get it.
So I guess the point here is if you're reading a comic in the 70s and you see some sort of billboard with an inexplicable name on it,
yeah.
more than likely you're discovering some ghost
artist.
Yeah,
if you look at one of the Fantastic Four ones, you'll see Vince's Stereo Shop.
Right. That's great. And now, hey, Bernie, the legend, Bernie Wrightson, he inked some of your work?
Yeah, he inked the Batman. It was funny because I didn't have any idea about it. It was with the York Comic Conventions. Do you remember them?
Yes. The old
Cosmic Cons?
Yeah. And barely, Vince. I'm younger than you.
I remember being in the down with all the artists and the tables, you know, and all the dealers.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a balcony overhead, and Wrightson walks by and he yells, "Hey, Vince!" I go, "Oh, hi!" And he goes, "Hey, I just finished inking your Batman." I said, "How'd you know?" And he goes, "I could tell it was you."
Right, that's great.
And that's the first that I heard that he inked it. It was great. I mean, he was my hero for that kind of thing. He
right,
was a
yeah.
big Bridgman
great
artist.
Though, yeah, great
he
artist.
Modeled after George Bridgman, and
yeah.
I was getting into that as well. So it was kind of cool, you know?
Now, were you like a good part of that community, that scene, the artist scene? It's not like now, isn't it, where they're like almost like star status. That whole artist community of the 70s where you have Wrightson, you have Adams, you have yourself,
yeah.
you know, Buckler, all these guys. You guys aren't known outside of like a core a niche audience. Like,
well, they were... You know, a lot of these guys were a lot bigger than they are today. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they weren't superstars. Neil Adams, I guess, was about the closest superstar status. I think Todd McFarlane, when he started with Image, they started changing that.
Yeah.
But up to
saying.
That point, I mean, you got to remember how many artists have made a living from the 30s on that were nothing but ghosts.
Yeah.
Guys who do Superman. The only thing that Superman in the 30s and in the 40s, Schuster would just draw the faces. He'd ink the faces. He wouldn't even draw them.
Right.
And other guys would do them. The ghost business has been big, and a lot of guys didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they were getting paid.
Yeah.
Or were they? Were you getting paid?
not that way. No, we got paid in books, but at that point, I did for some. But at
right.
that point, that was with Buckler. That was a learning. And let me tell you, that's when I really picked up things. I learned a lot. Jim Steranko once came up at one of these comic Cosmic Cons, and he looked at my artwork because I had a booth, and we were publishing then. And he said, "You know," he says, "you draw the best hands I've seen."
Nice.
And I thought, gee, that was a great compliment.
From Steranko.
From Steranko.
Wow.
And then he says, "Too bad they're just not good for comics."
Right.
And I went, oh.
Wow.
Expletive deleted.
<Yeah. laughs>
But no, but, you know, he explained to me what it was, but... I took a small course with him when I was in New York, and I still do my eyes and my ears like he taught me.
Uh-huh.
The hands actually started becoming very, very expressive after I worked with Rich. Rich was very big at studying art. when they wanted him to draw like Jack Kirby. Remember in those days?
Yeah.
You remember. Everybody had to draw like Jack Kirby. Or another time they had to draw like...
Well, there was a Marvel way of drawing or a DC way of drawing.
And at that time it was Jack Kirby. And since he was going to take over the Fantastic Four, he had to start... He just laid out all these Kirby books, and he would sit there and sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the same thing. And but in doing that, we learned a lot.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden, even to this day, I still use little tricks. I've seen. I used to see him draw a character by starting at the hand. Let's say the hand is up in the air. He would draw the hand and work his way down.
Wow.
You know, he had studied them so long, and when he was trying to imitate. Neil Adams, he did the same thing.
Right.
The editors tended to want you to wanted you to draw the way that a particular, you know, artist that was big at the time.
Right.
When John Buscema was big, I used to send stuff into Marvel that looked like John Buscema drew them, like Conan.
Now, how did that work back then? Did you were you allowed to keep your art? The art that you did?
I have some of those Fantastic Four pages.
Right.
Rich got some of them back,
mm-hmm.
so he'd give me some of them.
That's nice.
Yeah, so I still have. I got the... it was one of the ones with the thing fighting a dinosaur in New York, a big Tyrannosaurus.
Right.
And...
That's Vince's attempt to try to tell you what issue that was.
Vince can't remember the number of the issues.
It's the one with the dinosaur.
Can't remember the
colors.
You know, narrows
it
maybe
down.
You bring that up some other time, and I'll tell the story of how Joe Sinnott inked them, which was fantastic for me to have Joe Sinnott inked.
Mm-hmm.
But he took that dinosaur... And he, I didn't put all those scales in that if they ever figure out which issue it is.
Right.
He put in all these great scales. He sat there and inked all these fantastic scales. At the end of that book, I had, there was a scene where they were coming across, this entire army was coming across to this dimension, and the torch was sitting on top of a tank. And behind them, there was soldiers in front and soldiers behind, and there was this massive army. I drew all these little figures in there. Huge,
mm-hmm.
huge army.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to look great. Now, this is Sinnott. He inks all these scales where I didn't draw them, and he takes out half the people that I had in that scene.
Son of a...
That was disappointing.
Oh.
You know,
oh,
because it sort of destroyed the flow of it, but,
right.
I mean, it was a lot of,
listen,
lot of work.
That's collaborative work, though, so
yes.
it's give and take,
yes.
right?
But to have it, you know, to have stuff inked by Joe Sinnott was phenomenal back then.
Now, don't mean to cut you off, Vince. We're running out of time. We need like 3 hours with you. We're going to do like some sort of big special later. But now you, I'm gonna fast forward it really quickly. You're now today. You are involved with Mohawk College in Hamilton, Ontario. They have or had, and I think they're going to resurrect it. Comic design and scripting program, and you helped them. You were teaching. What were you teaching over there?
I was teaching basically cartooning, storytelling, sequential art, anatomy, that kind of thing. And last semester, I was teaching sequential art practices,
which involves what? Telling the students how to lay out a page and all that kind of stuff.
And for some of the students, it was also how to use it in everyday practicality. You know,
right?
As well, but when there's actually ones that are interested in comics, then, you know, we would do more about the stories.
Right.
How to lay it out, how to do panels a certain way. This year I also taught character design and concept illustration as well.
Right.
It was mostly to touch on it with some students.
Right. Now,
so hopefully we'll get back to that.
Yeah. Now, is it... I mean, your take on the industry now, I mean, it must be really hard for some guy just to come out of a program like that you're involved in and all of a sudden go to, you know, put a resume into Marvel and I want to draw Spider-Man or something like that.
Who ever heard of an artist putting in a resume?
What do you call those things?
You work.
Portfolios.
Right. Yeah.
It's almost like now you have to kind of do your own work first to get noticed, and then...
Well, it's a heck of a lot easier. I mean, that's a show in itself, you know,
right.
that you can talk about. But, I mean, we didn't have the internet.
Yeah.
I got to know most of these guys because I published my own magazine. And that's how I got to meet Jim Steranko, because he had one of these little books he'd keep on his coffee table.
Right.
But nowadays, you've got the internet, you've got cheap publishing...
It's easy. You know what, Vince? I apologize.
You're probably running out of time.
You know what? We are totally out of time. It's just like, just blew by, and I apologize, but we will get back to you. We'd love to have you on again as a guest when we, and we'll devote the whole show to you. Thanks again, Vince Marchesano, for coming on the show. Everybody, enjoy the week. Get out and support your local comic shop, and we'll see everybody next week.
Buy more DC Comics.
Buy more DC Comics, Vince says.